So then, good evening, and so maybe we can start off by meditating for a few minutes, if you like. So it's good on the basis of a comfortable and upright position. So even though that sometimes seems like a like a contradiction, then so to try to focus the mind internally. And so try to get an internal focus. So it's a little bit so the setup is different here than what I'm used to in Germany. So I have to be close to the microphone. So then one can three times perhaps. So then direct the mind to the coming and going of the breathing, and then three times with the out-breath one can imagine that stress and tension and the like, so they're leaving one's body and so disappear behind the horizon, and one can imagine that through that so the mind becomes completely clean, clear. So even if, so perhaps one can actually, the mind actually becomes clean, clear, but even if the mind does not become clean, clear, one can imagine it. So we can first do this. So this, without any tension or force, so just leaving the mind, just leaving the breathing, letting the breathing come naturally, and then three times with the out breath, so we just imagine that everything, so that tension and disturbing thoughts and the like, so they just leave one's mind and body continuum, and then through that everything becomes clean, clear. So we can just do that first. And so then after that one can just unify the unify the mind with the coming and going of the breathing, so just letting the breath come and go in a natural manner, and so in order to enhance the inner focus, one can count the out-breath from 1 to 7 or 1 to 10 or 1 to 21. So, thank you very much. And so then maybe we can read together the taking refuge and generating bodhicitta verse. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, practice of giving and the other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, by my practice of giving and the other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, by my practice of giving and the other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So, so anyway, so thank you very much for having me here tonight, so that we have the opportunity to discuss together something about the 12 links of dependent origination. So, so actually, so it was one when I discussed the topic with Mary. It was my so it was my requirement that some of the regular students would memorize the 12 links. So I'm not sure whether it will be too hard for somebody to mention all of them, but maybe one can get them all together. So in the taxi we got already the first three. so what are the 12 links? What are the first three 12 links? So ignorance, causative action, and then consciousness. So then we have 9 left to go. So it doesn't matter, even if they're out of sequence, so whichever ones come to mind. Name and form. Six senses. Six senses. Contact. Contact and feeling, craving, grasping. Discrimination. That's one of the mental, the 5 mental factors, the 5 ever-present mental factors. Craving, grasping, existence. And existence. Yes. attachment. No, attachment is not separately, not one. No. So then now it should be easy. Aging and death. And a birth. Yeah. And okay. Yeah, so those 12, they are referred to as the 12 links of dependent arising. And of course, you know, one could of course say somehow discrimination also fits in there, or attachment also fits in there, but explicitly, so how they are labeled are not as they were just named. And so one can say, of course, a lot about this. So first of all, they are called the 12 dependent links, or the 12 links of dependent origination. So one has here this concept of dependent arising, and that is a very, you know, very important topic in Buddhism. So it is a very important concept. Because dependent arising, and dependent arising is also very practical for the Western mind, because the dependent arising doesn't depend so much on taking something just on belief, and also dependent arising has nothing to do with somebody making up some rules. So dependent arising is simply cause and effect. So it is, I think it is a very practical concept that one can to understand. So that one can, maybe with a Western mind, that one can easily relate to. And it is also very important to understand, of course. So for example, if we plant a certain seed, like if we plant a cherry seed, what is the result that one can expect from that is a cherry tree. So it has not much to do with, you know, prayers or, you know, wishing, or somebody, you know, sitting there with a little black book, sort of deciding, you know, what is going to come, you know, from this cherry seed. But it is simply a cause and effect. So if, you know, if in our garden or in our balcony or wherever we want to get a cherry tree, so then, you know, what we need to plant is the cherry seed. Mm. If we are planning to have an apple tree or some other plant, some people they may want to grow marijuana plants, and then. And then we plant a cherry seed. People grow all kinds of things, you know, on their balcony sometimes. If one wants to have an apple tree, and then we plant, but we plant a cherry seed, so it doesn't matter, you know, what one wishes for. It doesn't matter if the result that we wish for is an apple tree. Even if we make many, many prayers, it doesn't matter, it won't change the result. Still, what one will get is the cherry tree. So that is simply, a dependent arising. So one sets in motion certain causes. One creates certain causes and conditions. And then these causes and conditions, they determine the result. So there is this very specific relationship between results and their causes, which we can observe. So the Buddha said himself that the majority of the majority of cause and effect relationships we can observe in the world around ourselves. So that is not something one needs to study many years of philosophy to understand. So one only needs to be observant, and then one can see, oh yes, there is this relationship, specific results need specific causes, and the other way around. So here with the 12 links of dependent arising, so this is a model that describes how one finds oneself always in a difficult situation. So it describes how one always finds oneself in a difficult situation, and it also describes how one can free oneself from that difficult situation. Because the what is the situation of the average person, the normal person? So the situation of the normal person is, so everybody wants a happiness, and normally nobody wants suffering. So we can, and our wish for happiness, it is not only very vague. It's not like it's only sometimes there, but it's not really concerning us most of the time. I think the reality for us is that, our wish for happiness determines, our actions, from the very moment that we get up in the morning. And it determines the very, very, like how I say, like the details of our life. So for example, it will determine what kind of morning beverage we like to drink. So this, for example, some people, they like coffee. Like I myself, I usually am more a coffee person than a tea person, but I drink also tea. But anyway, it doesn't matter. So then usually, it can't just be any coffee or any tea. Some people they like filter coffee, then other people they prefer espresso based coffees like lattes or cappuccinos. Then some people they like the instant coffee. So one has already gone one detail. It's not just coffee, but one has to already it became specific. But then also then usually it doesn't stop there. Like some people they may like espresso based coffees, but again there's a variety. Lavazza, or so many different kinds of brands. For some people, it needs to be organic. And then, how is it made? With how much milk, how much sugar? And there's a reason why I'm going into this. For example, if with the sugar. If it's just slightly off, it doesn't need to be a lot, like half a teaspoon. Half a teaspoon too much sugar, or half a teaspoon not enough sugar, so and already it doesn't taste. And then because it doesn't taste, so one doesn't like it. It is a very insignificant part of our life. But so our wish for happiness so determines also here, determines our actions into a very small detail. If we go somewhere and then we find, or they just make our cappuccino or their latte or whatever we drink, and we find, or they make it just right, so we will go there, again and again. If they don't make it right, we will never go there again. And like this, so out of the wish, wanting to have more happiness, so even if it is just an additional little bit more happiness, so out of that motivation, that underlying motivation, so that determines all our actions. So from morning till night, what we dress, which way we go for work, how we arrange our place at work, so it is everything. So then the reason why I'm saying this is, so if we add up all of those actions, also like the people we surround ourselves, so that plays also a big part, which people we like, which people give us happiness, which people don't give us happiness, which people give immediate, medium happiness, which people give suffering. So there's a lot of attention comes into play, and so if we add up all of these actions, avoiding some people, then wanting to meet other people, all these even minute actions that we engage in that are important for us, how much sugar is in the coffee, so it is so important for us. So if we add up all these minute actions, that we have engaged in all our life, so we would come to hundreds of thousands of actions, if not millions of actions. So in Buddhism, we talk about mental actions, verbal actions, and physical actions. So hundreds of thousands or millions of actions that we already engaged in our life, so to with the aim of wanting to have more happiness. So if somebody would tell us, I worked for those years, tens of years, all those years, I worked all the time from the morning I get up until in the evening, so I work. And so let's say they don't say they work for happiness, let's say they work for money. So they say, I work all this time. I went to this country and I work, all this time. I spend all this amount of effort to become rich. So, and then we want to say, well, okay, so how much did you make? So and we would think, so our expectation would be, well, he really has to have some serious money in the bank. Right? Right? Yeah. Okay. So then we have to check up. So this is a personal checkup. This is not something I can sort of impute this onto you. So this is a personal checkup. So if you check up similarly, so if we check up in our own situation, so all these actions which are aimed at attaining more happiness, from morning till night, year after year, day after day. So then comparatively, so if we would translate the happiness that we have achieved from that, if we would translate that into money, so how much money would it be? Yeah? A huge amount of happiness. Yes. So right now you have a huge amount of happiness. That's good. So that's good. That's good. Because if that is the case, then all the actions there were the right actions. So if it is the case that that one feels, oh, there was a lot of activity, but then the result, it doesn't quite match. So the result, the output, the outcome, it doesn't really quite match the input. No, it's disproportional. So if we see, if we, you know, if we find, oh, it is that situation, then so then that's the, you know, that's what the 12 links are about. So they, you know, the 12 links, so they describe, so one engages into actions, but somehow, you know, through engaging into the wrong actions, so even though the motivation is there to attain more happiness, so then, but the result doesn't come about. So that is the, you know, that is the problem. So the 12 links, they try to describe us, or how it comes that even though, you know, we you know, we work, you know, for happiness, they, you know, it happened that the outcome doesn't quite match, you know, the wish, the expectation. Because also, you know, most of the time, you know, the person, the innermost wish of the person is to have the best type of happiness. Like is somebody here that doesn't desire best type of happiness? Sometimes one gets, like if you think you go to the supermarket and they offer, you know, perfect pure happiness, and then, you know, next to it they say, well, not perfect pure happiness, but nearly, you know, slightly flawed happiness. And then next to that they say, well, you know, most of the time happiness with a little bit of suffering. So if you think, you know, there would be such a supermarket, so, you know, then which one, you know, which one would you buy? It's on special, so you can afford it. There's no problem. The affording is not the problem. It's on special. So what do you think? So who would choose the first, the most pure type of happiness? So who would choose the type of happiness, the slightly flawed happiness? And who would choose the type of happiness with some suffering? You didn't put your finger up at all. Are there any takers for the happiness with a little bit of suffering? What is in New York? Nobody wants happiness with a little bit. No, most of the time. Anyway, most of the time, this is actually the first, the first time. So most of the time, there's always somebody that says, "No, I want the happiness with some suffering." But you see, so the underlying thought is still. Then, if you ask why, then the person says, "Well, because I can't really imagine having proper happiness without having some suffering." But you see, then the underlying thought is still the person wants to have the best type of happiness. So that's our underlying motivation, is to wanting to have the best type of happiness, and that is, you know, that is there's nothing wrong so with the motivation. Okay. So it's just the you know, does one create the right type of causes? So that is the issue. So also happiness, and especially uncontaminated happiness. Needs the right type of causes. So if you don't create the right type of causes, then even if we make prayers, you know, it doesn't help. So one doesn't get the right type result. So then with the 12 links, The first link is the link of ignorance. So it is in Buddhism it is explained that ignorance lies at the basis of or is the the basis for all problems. So what type of ignorance are we talking about? What is ignorance? Illusions? Delusions, yes. Yes. But what is a delusion? Okay, seeing things as they are not, yes. So there's one type of ignorance which is simply a not knowing of something. But that is not the ignorance that one is talking about here. So here one is really talking about seeing things as they are not. So not just not seeing something, but actually seeing things as they are not. So very specifically, seeing things as existing out from their own sight. So there's all this terminology. So some of you, have heard this terminology already, many times. Not existing from its own side, and so seeing things as existing from their own side, existing inherently. Existing not merely labeled by the conceptual mind and so forth. So one needs to think about what is really meant. What is really meant by that? So, for example, our reality is, that we are. Our reality is that we are. We are one part of a whole, like an interconnected whole. So that is the reality. So as a person, as a cut-off person, independent from, even just independent from other people, so that is not possible. So one cannot survive. So whatever we need, just a simple example, whatever we need for our daily living, such as food, drink, clothing, etc. So all of that comes about only, in relation to others, because other people produce these things. So then, of course, the Western mind immediately thinks, well, I don't really need those other people because I earn my own money. So as long as I earn my own money, then I can go to the shop and buy the things that I need. But then also, that is sort of the Western thinking, I think. But also that we can earn money, that also usually only happens only in dependence on others. So it doesn't matter whether one is an employee or an employer. So one can only be the one or the other. Independence, interdependently. So, for example, one can only work somewhere if there's somebody that actually founded that company, and then also if there are all the other people that are working in this company. And similarly, if one is an employer, so that only works because there are people who are willing to work for one. So it is this, interaction, this interdependent arising. So similarly, also as a human being, one can't survive without a company and attention and so forth. So So if one goes into it, definitely, you know, as one human being, one is definitely dependent, you know, on other human beings. So one is, when one really thinks about it, well, there's a great, great room, you know, to meditate. One can go into great detail. So one can see that the interconnections, you know, they're very, very vast. And one can, in the end, one can actually see, okay, so one is actually, one is one part of an interconnected whole, if one thinks about it. So this is the time when we think about it. When we analyze, then we come to see that. Yeah, then we come to see that. But our instinctive feeling is completely opposite. The instinctive feeling is, I'm an individual, completely independent of others. Up to the point where one thinks, I don't really need others. Yeah. So this is the, and that would be the perception of inherent existence. So one has this feeling, one somehow exists, can exist from one's own side. So one, existence from its own side means complete independence, being completely independent of anything else. So that's that is not possible. So if we think about it, we can see it is not possible. But our instinctive feeling will be that it is like that. So that's the thing. So it is explained. So we have that we have this kind. That is the ignorance. So the reality is not that we are interdependent, but the ignorance sees it different. So the ignorance says, we are existing independently. So this type of ignorance, we have within relation to ourself. So in relation to ourself as a person, and also, to the environment, to the phenomena that make up our environment. So the problem. So the problem, one major problem with this misperception is that it gives us also a very concrete, notion of how things are. So it may give us a very concrete notion of how we ourselves are. If something exists from its own side, then it means it cannot change. So if something cannot change, so then that can become very that can become very oppressing. So for example, if one has a certain self-image, so and let's say. That self-image is, some people, they have a bad self-image where actually the thought is in the mind, like I'm bad. So the mind, it may not be conscious, but there may be some underlying feeling, I have no value, or I'm bad, I have no value, or I'm incapable. So that is possible. So that person has this kind of self-image. So then, if the person thinks that this is intrinsic, So if the person thinks, oh, this is really a reality, so then it becomes oppressing. It becomes a truth. So the person thinks, oh, that's how I'm really are. You know, there is no room for change. In interdependent origination, so there is plenty of room for change. So in interdependent origination, there is also the room to question the appearances to one's mind. There is also the room to question one's perceptions. So it could be, it could be the case that one thinks, I'm incapable, even though one is actually capable. But because of the ignorance, that is really how our mind usually functions. Our mind always makes everything that appears to it as very, very true. It usually doesn't leave much room for doubt. There's not much room to question what appears to the mind. If we think about the concept of emptiness, so the opposite of ignorance. And if we think about, for example, if we think about a dependent arising. So then, first of all, we can think, in this case, there may be the idea. Maybe I think that I'm incapable, but let's question, that appearance to the mind. Because that is one main job when we try to counteract ignorance. So one main job in Buddhism is actually we have to question what appears to our mind. Like we have to take it with a grain of salt. Is that an English expression? Yeah. So for example, if one thinks, if one feels really down, and in a case, so one may feel, it is a possibility. One may feel I'm incapable or worthless. So that is something that one should really question. The same, also the other way around. So if one feels that one is really superior to everybody else, so then that is also, there's also room to question that. But so the point is, one point of all this blah blah is, so one always hears these terms and this, the 12 links. So it's a little bit a problem, because 12 links, so it starts with ignorance. So ignorance is already, it talks about one of the most profound topics in Buddhism. It doesn't start with something easy. So, and then one gets confronted with these terms. It says, okay, so what is ignorance? So, we had ignorance is a delusion. What makes it a delusion? It is a distorted mind. How distorted? So, and then one gets these terms. It makes things appear as inherently existent. It makes things appear as existing from their own side, and so forth. So then at the beginning, these can be just, just maybe complicated terms. So, but one has to make these terms, these concepts, so one has to make them work for oneself. So one has to integrate them and, in one's daily life, and think, so in my daily life, so where can I identify these? So the Buddha said that we do have this misconception of independence, or this misconception of inherent existence. Well, so the Buddha said that, then let's see, so in my daily life, so where do I have, where could I identify these types of appearances? And then also how, you know, how could I see that actually, you know, they are harmful? So one has to make these concepts, you know, we have to make them work for ourselves. And maybe here, so one important principle maybe, so that one finds in the Buddhist text, it comes repeatedly, and maybe it's good for one's own personal practice, is there's always the difference between the time of analysis and the time of no analysis. So that, you know, that is constantly referred to, that things appear to us one way when we don't think about it, and then when we start to think about it, and then the perception changes. So usually for the better, if we apply the right analysis. So no. So one doesn't always need to take everything, you know, at a face value. And then, you know, because, and this is, you know, this is an experience. So, you know, it is something that one can put into practice. It can be, you know, it can become a personal experience. Initially, because of not analyzing, so then a mental affliction is generated, you know, such as attachment or anger. So out of ignorance, it is explained. So then comes attachment or anger. And then there's always that situation, you know, in the moment of attachment or anger. So we like to believe in it. So the mind believes in it very strongly. You know, if one is angry about something, so the mind believes in it very strongly. Sometimes there's also one part of the mind, you know, that likes to believe in it. You know, because it's more comfortable to be right in one's anger than to be wrong with one's wisdom. So, but it is usually it is a common experience on some level. So there's this initial moment of anger, you know, because one gets angry at the other person for some reason. So that is the time of no analysis, the immediate situation. So there was no analysis, just how it appears to the mind, and one gets angry. And then, but then one starts to analyze, so one starts to think about it. So hold on, is that really what that person meant? Or did that person really mean to harm me, for example? A very common way of thinking about it. And then one finds, when one starts to think about it, oh, actually, you know, that person didn't mean to harm me, you know, they were just, you know, were trying to make some joke, or so there can be so many different situations. Or one comes to think about, well, you know, maybe, you know, they did mean to harm me, but actually, you know, they didn't really sort of mean it also out of themselves, but it just came about because they were stressed or because of a misunderstanding. So anyway, it is a common experience that then through the second step of analysis, so then a transformation happens in the mind and the anger recedes. So one can definitely observe this difference, you know, the time of no analysis and the time of analysis. And then that shows also the lack of inherent existence. So if things would only exist inherently, then we couldn't change anything. So it means also we couldn't change our mind, you know, we could not change our perceptions, so we would be stuck, you know, with one perception. When is it a time to have a break? Whatever you like. No, whatever you like. Because you, whatever you like, you suggested to have a break in between, so I don't. It's been 1 hour now, yeah. Yeah, then it's time for a break. So ignorance is done with, so now comes what happens after ignorance, so it's a good time for a break. Okay, so...